Today on The Matt Walsh Show, Christian Bale gives the most honest acceptance speech at an award show in history. We'll talk about that. Also, Ellen DeGeneres was attacked for defending Kevin Hart. Now, wait a second. Did the rules of identity politics just get suspended again? I guess so. We'll discuss all of that and more today on The Matt Walsh Show. Well, as you can see, I have sustained a serious life-threatening injury. That's what happened over the weekend. If you're listening on iTunes, there's a Band-Aid on my finger. That's what I'm referring to. It's kind of a funny story, actually. So my wife was out of the house on Saturday, and she was going to meet a friend who had come into town. And I decided while she was out of town that I was going to spend my time trying to whittle an arrow out of a stick that I found in the backyard. Why? Because why not? And also because my son had gotten a bow and arrow set for Christmas, but the arrows were kind of cheap and a few of them have broken already. So I said to him, you know what? I'm going to whittle you. I'll make you an arrow. That's what I'll do. All right. Your old man's going to show you how to make an arrow. And so he was very excited about that. Also, my son's going through kind of this Elizabeth Warren phase where he's obsessed with Indians, and he's learning about Indians, reading about them. He has a teepee that he plays in. And so I thought it'd be cool to show him how Indians would make arrows. I assume that this is how they did it. So anyway, the problem was that I couldn't find my pocket knife. So I texted my wife and said, where's my pocket knife? I want to whittle an arrow. And it tells you something that my wife didn't really question that at all. She didn't have any questions. She just told me where she put it. And I know you might say, what kind of a man has to text his wife about where his pocket knife is? It should just be in his pocket. But I text my wife to find it where, you know, it's just a reflex. Anytime I'm looking for anything, I'll just text her. I texted her, where's the refrigerator the other day? It's a reflex now. It's just what I do. So I text her, where's the pocket knife? She told me. I said, I'm going to whittle an arrow. She didn't really have any reaction to that, oddly enough. And then about 90 seconds into the whittling process, I took a nice little chunk out of my finger. It went pretty deep, and the blood was flowing pretty good. And then I didn't know where the Band-Aids or the hydrogen peroxide is, so I had to text her, where are the Band-Aids and the hydrogen peroxide? So it's sort of a funny, you know, thing there for her, because from her perspective, I text, where's my pocket knife? And then like 90 seconds later, hey, by the way, unrelated, where are the Band-Aids and the hydrogen peroxide? Just so you know, though, my kids were not traumatized by the sight of me bleeding all over the place. And I know that because while I was in the process of bleeding and fumbling around for Band-Aids, my son comes up to me and asks for a snack. So that just to show you how concerned he was. Anyway, the Golden Globes were yesterday. The Golden Globes were held yesterday. I haven't seen the ratings yet for the show, but I continue to doubt whether any human has ever actually sat down to watch an entire award show on television. I refuse to believe that anyone would do that to themselves willingly. Of all the ways to spend an evening, you could read a book, you could play a board game, you could whittle an arrow, you could cut off your finger. So many things you could do that would be better than sitting there for 7 hours watching rich people congratulate themselves. I don't believe that anyone has ever done. I don't think that any award show has ever been watched on TV by anyone. That's my theory. But there was an award show yesterday, the Golden Globes, and it seems that one thing happened there that's worth mentioning. Because it was a moment of incredible, though unintentional, honesty. Christian Bale won the Golden Globe for his performance as Dick Cheney in the movie Vice. I haven't seen the movie. I've heard that it's absurdly, openly biased. Not surprising about, you know, that's not very surprising. Basically, it's just an undisguised hit piece against Cheney and the Bush administration. It makes no attempt at all to appear that it's anything other than a hit piece. And here's the thing about that. I don't have a problem with movies that mock politicians. As I say all the time, politicians should be mocked. Mocking politicians it's an American pastime. It's an American tradition. It's about the most American thing you could ever do is insult one of our politicians. They should all be insulted, just on principle. It's a wonderful thing to do. The problem, though, is that Hollywood would never make a Vice-like movie about, say, Bill Clinton. It would never, ever put something so nakedly scornful and contemptuous out there about a Democrat politician. It would just never do that. That's the problem. The problem is how one-sided it is. My dream, my vision would be a situation where there are these kinds of movies coming out every year, tons of them, about Republicans and Democrats, where we're just constantly mocking and making fun of these people. It's what Thomas Jefferson would have wanted, okay? Now, the closest thing that I think Democrats have done, or Hollywood has done, same thing, the closest thing Hollywood has done about Democrats would be the movie Chappaquiddick, about the time when Ted Kennedy drowned a woman. And I saw that movie, it's a very good movie. But the difference is that they waited 50 years to tell that story. And the movie, which again was a good movie, worth watching, but it's a mature movie, okay? It's not agitprop. It's not a cartoon like Vice. And so the principal players all come across about as sympathetically as possible given the circumstances, given that it's a movie about a woman drowning and then people trying to cover it up and trying to, you know, figure a way to wiggle out of it legally and politically. Given all of that, the principal players come across about as sympathetically as possible. The movie isn't trying to paint anyone as just straightforwardly evil. Those kinds of movies are always about Republicans. Always. A Democrat will never be the target of a movie like that. So, in any case, Christian Bale won. And then he gets up there to accept his award. And as kind of a nice change of pace, because usually, or often anyway, you'll see these people go up and they'll thank God for helping them to produce whatever piece of filth they're being awarded for. But in this case, Christian Bale proceeded to thank Satan during his acceptance speech. And I think it's the first time, I don't know, but I'm pretty sure it's the first time in a Hollywood awards ceremony that Satan has been explicitly thanked for helping whatever achievement. Now, his thanking of Satan was meant to be tongue-in-cheek. He was saying that Satan helped to inspire him to play Dick Cheney. So it was meant to be an insult of Dick Cheney, obviously. But it was unintentionally, I think, the most honest moment in the history of award shows. And really, I would prefer this. I would prefer it if most of these people went up there and just thanked Satan rather than thanking God for whatever degrading nonsense they produced. Because Satan is glorified by Hollywood much more than God is glorified. And I think Satan's influence is far more evident in most of what Hollywood comes out with than is God's influence. So yes, thank Satan. Satan deserves most of the credit after all. I think Christian Bale had that right. So that was I think in the end, that was a revealing, honest moment, and we should all be thankful for it. Speaking of award shows, you've heard obviously that Kevin Hart had to resign from his Oscars hosting gig after the outrage mobs descended on him for some supposedly homophobic jokes that he made years ago on Twitter and in one of his stand-up acts. Well, Hart appeared on Ellen this past Friday, and Ellen obviously is a lesbian woman, and she expressed her support for Kevin Hart and asked him to rescind his resignation and to host the Oscars again. She said that she talked to the Oscars people and they said that they would still like to have Kevin Hart host, even though they threw him under the bus and all that. So she said that she thinks Kevin Hart's a great guy, a phenomenal talent. He's already apologized for the jokes and he shouldn't need to keep apologizing, and we should all just move on. That was her point. Now, I'm not much of a fan of Ellen DeGeneres. I'm not I don't really have an opinion about her one way or another. I don't watch the show, but I thought it was a good moment. And I thought it was great that she kind of stood up to defend Hart against the rage mobs. And it was good that she did it as a lesbian woman, because you would think, according to the rules of identity politics, that should sort of shut down the rage mobs. Now that, because she has credibility to stand up and make this point. Well, the left apparently did not agree. They did not like that Ellen had betrayed them by refusing to join with them and grab a pitchfork and all of that. So Ellen was attacked for defending Kevin Hart. I'll give you just one example of the responses that she received. There was an editorial that made the rounds over the weekend, and the editorial had this title: Who Died and Made Ellen DeGeneres the Gay Pope? The article by someone named Drew Goines says, in part, kindness doesn't mean forgiving people who've done bad things without being sure they understand what happened and are committed to making things right. DeGeneres' unilateral dispensation to Hart on behalf of the LGBTQ community and her kneecapping of Hart's critics truncates that process. That's bad for all the LGBT people she claims to represent, and it's bad for Hart, who gets to skip over the part of the process where he becomes a better, more empathetic person. Hart made a half-hearted apology where when he announced that he was stepping down as host, but he hasn't made any clear amends to LGBTQ people, and he certainly doesn't seem to have atoned for his words. How can he, so long as he views the criticism of his past words as, quote, slander on my name? More important, even if Hart had more fully repented, his sins are not DeGeneres's to forgive. Well, then, first of all, who is the person who's allowed to forgive him if Ellen DeGeneres can't? But think about the words that are being used here. Repent, dispensation, make amends, atone. Who exactly is the one claiming to be Pope? I mean, what sort of egomaniac demands atonement rather than simply accepting the apology? Atonement? Atone? What is that? What is he supposed to do, according to you, Drew Goines, and the rest of the people on the left who are upset that Ellen DeGeneres dare accept an apology from Kevin Hart? What is he supposed to do to atone himself? Does he need to go out into the wilderness for 40 days and fast? Does he need to walk down the street, begging forgiveness? What does he need to, run through some kind of gauntlet? What do you need him to do? If somebody hurts your feelings, if someone says something that hurts your feelings, and they apologize, that's supposed to be the end of it. You're not supposed to say, well, you haven't fully repented. Atone for your sins. Atone! What kind of person says that? Atone? I mean, who do you think you are? And this, again, is the incredible arrogance that you often find on the militant gay left. This insistence that everybody bow before them and kiss their feet. It is egomaniacal, is what it is. Now, Don Lemon had something similar to say on his show on Friday. He, in what we're told was an emotional segment, he said that Kevin Hart's apologies have fallen flat and that Hart needs to do more outreach and he needs to become a, quote, ally. Again, the arrogance. Who are you to demand that someone be your ally? Or that he engage in outreach and make amends? The apologies, his only sin here, his crime, which was not really a crime, but his crime was that he said words 7 or 8 years ago that I guess hurt some people's feelings, supposedly. And I don't even buy that they really hurt anyone's feelings at all. Because if anyone's feelings were hurt, they would have expressed it 7 or 8 years ago when he originally said it. But when you go digging something up, when you go looking for offense and you find it, you can't claim to really be offended. Okay? When you go searching desperately through Twitter or whatever, or combing through the archives of somebody's past stand-up performances, looking for something offensive, you obviously want to find it. And so when you find it, you can't say, oh my gosh, my feelings are so hurt. Oh, my tummy hurts. That hurts so much to see. No, it doesn't hurt. You're excited. You found what you were looking for. You went on an expedition. You went on a hunt. And you found the thing you were looking for. So you can't claim to be offended. But if you were offended, considering the offense consisted only of jokes, only of words, then all the person needs to do is just apologize. All they need to say is, I'm sorry. And that should be enough. But when you sit there and say, no, you need to be an ally. Look, if somebody were to mock Christians, which of course people mock Christians all the time, especially in Hollywood, and never does it engender much outrage, and you're not going to see an emotional segment from Don Lemon about, you know, incendiary jokes that were made towards Christians. But if somebody does mock Christians and then apologizes for it, which again is rare that you would get the apology, but if you did, then great. I would be, as a Christian, I would be appreciative of the apology. I would say, thank you for apologizing. I forgive you. Okay, let's move on. You know what I would never say to them? I would never say, no, you know what? The apology isn't good enough. You need to be an ally of the Christian community. Well, why should they be an ally? Who am I to demand that someone else be an ally of mine? Now, I can ask that they refrain from mocking or insulting me, but I can't say that my acceptance of their apology is contingent on them being an ally. I have no right to say that. I have no right to make that demand. Maybe they don't want to be an ally of Christians. Maybe they're not Christians. Maybe they disagree with Christians on a number of points. But they went overboard in expressing that in disagreement, and they went into the realm of mockery and insults, and so they apologize. But they still disagree, so I can't say, no, you know what? If you're really sorry, then you're going to agree with me about everything, and you're now going to be my ally. It doesn't work that way. And anyway, Ellen DeGeneres, as I said, is a lesbian woman accepting the apology of a black man. And yet all of these liberals are attacking her for it. Did the rules of identity politics get suspended again? I guess so. Now, Don Lemon is a gay black man, so he might have enough intersectional coinage to make these criticisms. According to the rules of intersectionality, Don Lemon, as a gay black man, should be about on the same... He should be on the same level in the victim hierarchy as a white gay woman, I would think. So fine, as a victimized equal, he can say whatever he wants, I guess, according to their rules. But everybody else, I mean, all of these white straight liberals who are on Twitter and, you know, on social media complaining, by their own rules, shouldn't they just shut up and butt out? Now, I happen to find it absolutely insane and also morally appalling to suggest that you only have the right to be a part of a certain conversation if you hit certain demographic markers, but that's what liberals claim all the time. That's their rules. And I could almost respect it, almost, if they actually followed those rules themselves, but the problem is they don't. They suspend the rules whenever they feel like it. That's the main problem with the intersectionality, the identity politics and everything, is that it's never applied equally and fairly and consistently. It just never is. So another example of this would be, according to their rules, A pro-abortion man should never get into an argument with a pro-life woman. He should just cede the point whenever a pro-life woman comes along. He should surrender because no uterus, no opinion, right? Isn't that how it's supposed to go? Liberal men should only ever argue about abortion with pro-life men. But the moment that a pro-life woman chimes in, he should just shut up and bow out. Those are the rules that he tries to impose on others. Those are the rules that he should follow, but he never does. There's that video of, and there are many videos like this, many cases like this, but there's the infamous video from a few months ago of a pro-abortion man essentially assaulting some pro-life women who were holding signs as part of a pro-life demonstration. That sort of thing should never happen. Forget about assault. He shouldn't even be arguing with them. He should be bowing before them and saying, you know what? I have no right to have an opinion about this. I mean, it's very convenient that when it comes to the abortion issue, the way that liberals try to present it, they'll say that pro-lifers are men who are just trying to control women's bodies, and they just completely overlook the millions and millions of women who are pro-lifers. In fact, the dirty little secret here is that the pro-life movement is led by women. Go to the March for Life sometime. The March for Life is going to be in Washington at the end of January this month. Go to the March for Life. I highly recommend it. You know what you're going to find? You're going to find a whole bunch of women. Not just women, but young women. You're going to find a whole bunch of women who are, you know, teenage, 20s, 30s women who are leading this movement. And according to the intersectional rules, according to the identity politics rules, pro-choice men should have nothing to say to them. But it never works that way. Didn't work that way with Ellen DeGeneres and the Kevin Hart situation. It just never works that way. They don't apply the rules to themselves. And you know the main problem with that is when you have a certain rule or a certain principle and you don't apply it consistently, and you don't apply it to yourself, then you're never really going to discover the problems with it. That's one of the reasons why I think principled consistency is so important. It's because when you apply your principles consistently and you apply them to yourself, then you're really going to get a look at your own principles. And if there are any flaws, any problems, you're going to discover them. But when you just suspend those principles, the moment they become inconvenient, you're never going to see the problems with them. So if pro-choice men were to apply the identity politics principles consistently and then say to themselves, well, you know what? I'm not allowed to say anything. The moment that a pro-life woman chimes in, I have to back down. I'm not allowed to have an opinion. But if they were to try to live by that rule, they would see, you know what, this is insane, actually. Why shouldn't I be allowed to have an opinion? Why should her demographics mean that I'm excluded from having an opinion? And then maybe they would say, oh, you know what, okay, so it doesn't make any sense when I apply it to myself. So maybe it doesn't make sense when I apply it to others. Maybe this whole thing is just nonsense. But if you don't apply it consistently, you'll never make that discovery. All right, we'll leave it there. Thanks for watching, everybody. Thanks for listening. Godspeed.
Coming up on The Ben Shapiro Show, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez spills the beans. We examine Tucker Carlson's take on populism, and the border wall war continues. That's coming up on The Ben Shapiro Show.